All right, I think we're ready to begin. I just want to make sure that people are able to see the PowerPoint presentation on the AT conference webpage or webinar material. I think there's just a couple people on there, and if you're on the call and you can't see it, let me know. But I think we're otherwise ready to start. Okay, so to begin with, probably the biggest item that's come up recently is the change in the schedule for the XK upgrade, which has a substantial interruption in it. So we'll start off with some detailed discussion of that, and then we'll move into some of the recent changes that have taken place in some of the maintenance periods for changes to the resource management and job scheduling. Some of them were highlighted in the last month's user call. And we'll briefly visit how we're doing with allocation usage and monitoring. Do our usual push for requests for information on publications and presentations, and then discuss whether or not we'll have a Blue Waters User Telecon in July, because that'll take place during our planned XK outage. And then finally, we have with us today Bob Fiedler from Cray, who's our application specialist, on-site application specialist, and he'll give us about a half-hour presentation on overlapping communication and computation with some of the new non-blocking MPI collectives that are available in the MPI MPH2 distribution from Cray, as well as some things he's done with Corey Fortran. All right. So as was sent out in a notice a week or two ago, we had to move our XK upgrade to take place next month instead of what we anticipated was being towards the end of this month. So just to start off with a reminder for those of you who either have been recently allocated and started on the machine after we've had some of these discussions. So the system is going to experience a substantial additional improvement to the XK compute capability of the system. So we're going to add 12 XK cabinets. And for those of you not familiar with the packaging of the system, the additional 12 cabinets will take the currently available 3,072 XK nodes up to 4,224 XK nodes. So we're doing some testing here, monitoring progress of the AT conference right now. Are there some people who are on the call right now who are using the AT conference live feed and are seeing things? We're just a little concerned that we're not getting people. So if there's anyone on the call who cannot see the presentation through AT conference, please let us know. All right, since no one seems to be responding, I think we're probably okay. So one of the things with the increase in the XK system is not only an additional number of nodes by roughly 20%, 25%, but what's going to happen is it's going to cause an increase of the total torus dimension from the currently existing 23 by 24 by 24 to 24 by 24 by 24. So that increases the aggregate communication bandwidth of the system. And along with that, we're going to make some changes to how the XK nodes are positioned within the torus. So currently, those of you using the XK nodes, the nodes are in a block, rectangular prism, of roughly of 8 by 8 by 24. So that's 8 nodes, 8 Geminis in X, or 16 nodes in X, 8 Gemini node, or 16 nodes in Y, and 24 Gemini or 48 nodes in the Z dimension. And currently in that region, there aren't, it's only XK nodes, there aren't any service nodes or IO nodes. And we're making a change to handle the increase in XK capability to a slightly different shape. So we're going to go to a more flatter rectangular prism of 15 by 6 by 24. And if you do the math, you'll find out that that additional node count is slightly more than the total XK nodes. We're going to be moving some of the XIO nodes to provide access to the Lustre file system from the currently positioned XE region into the XK region to better distribute more uniformly the XIO node file access throughout the high-speed network. The change in shape will also improve the aggregate bandwidth, since we have fewer links in Y but more in X, so the aggregate bandwidth of the system will increase as well. So we're hoping that this will take place in a nice timely manner. That should start, as we note here on the slide, July 15th, and as we sent out an email last week. We expect, according to Cray, that this upgrade will take roughly 4 weeks with respect to the user not being able to access the compute nodes of the system. So there will be some work going on prior to that, which will be non-interruptive. We'll be getting some cabinets sent down and installed and integrated into the electrical and the cooling, but all that's going to happen without any interruption to the system. Once we need to take down the high-speed network to start doing the recabling, or once Cray takes the system down to redoing the cabling, then the high-speed network and the compute node won't be available. At this time, the login file system and nearline storage will be available during that outage. We'll take advantage of this opportunity to do some preventive maintenance, some patching, some changes. So there will be some intermittent outages. We'll be giving you a day or two notice in advance for when those changes will happen. But we don't expect to see any problem with you being able to access your files either from the file system or from the nearline tape at HPSS. So if there are any questions about the XK upgrade, why don't you go ahead and ask them now. That'd be great. If not, we'll continue on. So we're primarily concerned with people who have some deadlines that are taking place around that time, and they need to get the runs done before then. So we're concerned about people's schedules. I know this time is during, obviously during the summer, and there's people who have travel, so hopefully interruption during the summer months won't impact people's schedules for publications or for grad students trying to graduate. All right, so not hearing any questions, and let me just take a quick check and see if anyone's raising their hand here. I don't see anybody asking any questions online. We'll continue on. All right, so we had some recent changes to our workload and job scheduling software. So for those of you familiar with Adaptive System 11 Torque, we've gone to a much more current version, much more current release to fix some issues that have impacted users, not dramatically, but has required significant monitoring to ensure a high quality of service. So we're trying to fix some of those issues. So we're currently at Torque 4.23 and Molette 7.23. As we mentioned last month, we were making some changes and adding some changes. Instead of using quality of service capabilities, we're using now the traditional queues. So those changes have been made and were sent out a couple weeks ago. So the batch queue is now no longer the default queue anymore. The normal queue is the name of the default queue. We now have a low queue, which has a lower priority, lower charging factor, and is preemptible. We now have a high queue, which has a higher priority and an appropriate charging factor for that. And then we have a deload queue. And with the same limitations with respect to job size and wall clock time that we've had in the past. We did disable the daily reservation that we had. So for a while, especially during friendly user period, we were limiting how large and how long jobs could run during normal business hours. And we noticed that once we went into production, with the decrease in the workload for a while and the fact that we saw the system draining, the transition into and out of the daily reservation was causing a fair amount of lower utilization of the system than we had hoped. So once we moved to the new version mode in Torque, we did not reinstate that daily reservation. So right now we have longer wall clock times for jobs as well that can run during the day. So hopefully this will make it easier for you to get your jobs through. In the last week or so, we've seen a substantial increase in system utilization, so we're pretty happy with the changes that were made. This information has been put on the portal as well, so if you have any questions, please refer to the portal. If you have any questions you want to address right now or any issues, please raise your hand or say something on the teleconference call. If anyone has any questions? No, it doesn't sound like it, right? So everyone's happy with our changes to our queue structure and our workload management, so that's good. Just to remind people, so this is something that came out last month, the usage command. So that's the easiest way for users to access online their current usage, either over a period of time or since the beginning of charging, which was April 2nd. You can also access some of this information through the portal as well. So one thing we've been pushing on, and the people who are PRAC allocated, NSF PRAC allocated users, we've been trying to contact the PIs to ensure that people are, that the different groups are monitoring their usage and making sure that they're either actively using their allocation or plan to use their allocation in a timely manner, or if they're using their allocations quicker than one would expect. So the point of contact has been contacting them. So one thing we were concerned for a while was utilization did go down substantially, and especially on the XE system. Recently, in the last week or so, that usage, that utilization has improved quite a bit, so we're quite happy about that. The one thing that we were really glad to see was the XP usage during this time remained high. So the teams that were targeting the GPUs found the GPU resource quite effective and efficient and have been able to keep that system quite busy. So it's very nice that we're going to be increasing the amount of XK capability by about 20-25%. So that's good. So the reason that we're pushing on the monitoring of your allocation and how things are going is we really want to avoid any end of allocation period contention or congestion. As we said earlier, the system is fully allocated, so there really isn't any way to add capability to the system in a way by saying that we weren't fully allocated. So as we get closer to the end of the first quarter of usage on the system for charging on the system, we want to review how we're doing and making sure that we're staying on track. Otherwise, at some point, it'll just become physically impossible for people to fully utilize their allocation by the end of their allocated period. During the first webinar, we did mention that we are looking at implementing a policy similar to what's available on some other systems out there, where if you're not able to sustain a certain usage rate, that every quarter we'll look at your usage and possibly adjust that allocation based on some well-defined returns. So if you don't utilize a certain amount of your allocation during the first quarter, and that amount we're still working on, then you might be subject to having some of your allocation return to the system. And so this is something that we've had some discussion with and we're still working on. It's not been implemented yet. We're still working on the details of that, and we'll certainly let people know once that's been finalized. But we're hoping that by encouraging people to use things like the low queue, which has a half charge rate, half charge factor, that people continue to use their allocation and keep the system busy. And along those lines, we're also working at providing usage rate tools. Some of the tools on the portal will be similar to the ones that people who are familiar with the Exceed portal have usage rate, burn rate GUIs to figure out how they're doing with respect to their allocation. We'll have some commands available on the login nodes as well, and maybe some kind of monthly notification by email. So are there any questions about utilization of the system and usage and respect to your allocation? No, people are very quiet today, and I can understand that. The summer and coming off vacation from last week, I'm still trying to ramp back up. All right, so moving right along. So I know many of you are probably waiting to hear more about overlapping communication and computation with non-blocking collectives. So we're continuing to push for information from teams, so definitely from the NSF PRAC teams and also from the GLCP allocated teams, And for the Illinois teams, we want to make sure we're aware of publications and presentations that are generated from work done on Blue Waters, either as part of the PRAC allocation or other allocated methods. And so these are public. This is information, even possibly preprints, so things that are in the pipeline, important results that you feel that are going to impact your field of science in a significant way. We would like to know about those in advance. It wouldn't be a situation where we would try to get information out beforehand, but we would like to be there when your paper gets published, for example. We want to know about that before so that we can time some announcements with that announcement, either by the journal, for example, or your home institution. We want to make sure that we're able to also relay that information to our project manager back at NSF so they can be kept abreast in late-breaking discoveries that are made possible by Blue Waters. If you go to the portal, there is a share results section that tells you how to contact our public affairs department, who's keeping track and helping us monitor this information. Or you can always send email, either if you're an NSF PRAC person, you can contact your point of contact. You can always send an email to help+BW as well, or me directly as well. All right, so upcoming events. The next Blue Waters user webinar is tentatively scheduled for July 15th, which is coming up pretty soon. That happens to be the same week that the system is down, the compute system is down. So we really won't have any significant changes to the system during that period of time, and users won't be able to do any runs on the system. So I think we may decide to postpone this webinar either into August or just cancel it and just only have the August webinar. Another interesting event that's coming up is the webinar, which is sponsored by Alinea and NVIDIA jointly. And so Alinea is our provider of our large-scale debugger, DDT, and of course NVIDIA is the provider of our GPUs on the system, the Keplers that we have. So there's a webinar Wednesday, 12 p.m. Eastern, on June 26th, which is understanding the dynamic parallelism, which is a feature of the Kepler GPU, using some of the tools provided by Alinea. So we don't offer all of Alinea's tool suite. They have some performance analysis tools that we don't license at the moment, but part of the webinar hopefully that deals with using DDT to look at your application while it's running on the GPU will be relevant. And so on the presentation here, I have the GoToMeeting site. It's being handled by NVIDIA, so NVIDIA is hosting the webinar as opposed to Alinea normally using WebEx, I believe is their normal method. So I think that's hopefully a useful webinar. I haven't seen the material in advance, so I don't know if there's some components that are not available on our system. So most features that are available, the NVIDIA GPU with Kepler on other systems are available on ours, but not everything. So I can't say for sure if everything that's presented during the webinar will be applicable to our system. All right, and as usual, we're always asking for recommendations for topics that you would find interesting for a future teleconference or webinar. So we're always scratching our head trying to see what people would find interesting. And so please send that information on to me if you have some ideas. That would be great. And that's it for the informational part of the Blue Waters User Telecom. We're going to switch over now to Bob Fiedler, who's going to give us a presentation on some of the work that he's been doing on Blue Waters. So first, just before we switch over, are there any administrative type questions that people want to bring up on the call before we switch over? Let me check if anyone's raising their hand here. No. Nope. Okay, good. Great. So we're going to switch over. I'm going to pass the presentation over to Bob Fiedler. Hopefully this transitions smoothly. That looks good. All right.
Okay, so this presentation is about various ways you can overlap communication and computation. In particular, it focuses on non-blocking around the all-to-all communication pattern, which is traditionally not overlapped very well with API. The standard one now is, has been a non-blocking call for a long time. So I'm going to talk about an application of this in the context of a turbulence code, PSDNS. It was one of the acceptance benchmarks for Blue Waters, and we've put in some effort to try to speed up the communication that it does because it dominates the runtime. So what I did was develop a test harness that runs the communication pattern with different implementations and sees how fast each of those implementations goes compared to the others. So I have a number of blocking and non-blocking implementations. And so I'll show results of some experiments with these different implementations, give you some tips about what helps and what hurts, the ability to overlap, and finish with some conclusions. So to give you a little information about PSDNS, so this is a turbulence code. Its main thing it's done time on is doing 3D fast Fourier transforms. Of course, those are used in a lot of different fields, and so this could be of interest to more groups than just those that do turbulence. And the way that this particular code, the common way of building up a 3D FFT by a series of 1D FFTs in each dimension, and in between those one sets of 1D FFTs, you have to do these global 3D array transposes. And that really is all of all communication, and you have to pretty much move all of the data in the simulation around the system. So that is a very network-intensive type of application. It actually scales as long as you get more bisection bandwidth per node. I mean, as long as the bisection bandwidth per node is constant, you can scale weekly. So it's not hopeless, but it does depend on the system doing that. And so say the torrents of a finite size, you know, as you make the problem bigger and bigger, eventually you can't get any more bandwidth and if the scalability stops over, or turns over. So there's various tricks that we've done already to try to improve the... go ahead. Is that a question or just noise? I guess noise. Okay.
Yeah, so if you're on and you're not muted... and you don't have a question, please mute your phone. Thanks.
All right. So one thing we did already was to decompose the transposes into, we noticed that there are some that occur in XY planes and the other set occurs in YZ planes because of the way the dimensions are being handled. If we assign one plane in the dimension or one plane of the domain to each node, then the one set of transposes, all of the communication stays on that node, and so we don't tax the interconnect. We just use shared memory on the node for those. So that actually gives an enormous benefit at scales that are on the order of 3,000 nodes, so it could be a 1.7 and more X improvement just doing that, just to keep communication on node as much as possible. Jumping around here in a funny way for me because of the delay, I guess it is. Okay, so but to take it to the next level, we want to be sure we can do those off-node, all-to-all communication patterns as fast as possible. So it actually does a number of simultaneous all-to-all communication calls, and each, basically it's one task per node is involved in each of these communicators. So there's like 16 or 32 of them going on at once. The way that you have to do the 3D FFTs, you are actually alternating communicators between the ones that are on node and the ones that are off node. So that's kind of a challenge if the MPI is trying to set up anything that it thinks it's going to be a repeated pattern, it will be fooled by this. So something to keep in mind. The test harness that I have mimics the behavior of the turbulence code pretty well, except that it tests just one message size at a time, whereas the real code has this cutoff radius, and so it actually has a range of message sizes that actually occur. But the larger messages spend most of the time, so it's still relevant. Okay, so basically what we want to do is to be able to run this during shared batch time, not have to ask for dedicated time. We want to zip through a bunch of implementations back to back, so we can compare one to the other, even though there's various effects of which nodes you get in a given run that could affect the bisection under per node and also interference from other jobs. We just want to try to eliminate that by running these tests back-to-back in the same batch step. I have two basic sets. There's one set that I call MPI-like, and we just call a library. And internal to that library are all the data structures that are needed to do the communication for you. And then there's another set where you directly use Go Array Fortran, kind of integrated into your code, to try to get even better performance. They were different data structures, so I have kind of two pieces in the test harness where I have to switch from the ordinary arrays to the core arrays, but that doesn't really affect the results. Okay, so there's the traditional blocking MPI implementation there. You just call the usual MPI all to all. And I developed a Co-Array Fortran version of that called Co-MPI all-to-all, and it's got practically the same argument. It's meant to be a drop-in replacement. It uses an internal Co-Array that's a cache-size buffer of about 4 megabytes. It breaks the messages down into smaller chunks, which the network is able to handle a little bit more efficiently than larger messages. It does use MPI barrier there for synchronization internal to itself, so it's a blocking call. And very recently, meaning over the weekend, I was able to overlap communication in that library with its copy to the next chunk of information that's going to pass in the next iteration. So it's attempting to speed even this library up. So I'll show some results of that later. First, I want to talk about the other... Darn it. Okay, here we go. All right, so the library, the original library in Co-Array Fortran, is basically breaking up your message into 64 elements of the array at a time, so that's 512 bytes. That we just found empirically that that's the best size for this. There's very low latency in the communication that Co-Array Fortran does because it's a one-sided protocol. So it just basically copies the data from your send buffer into a Co-Array, and then in the second loop there, it communicates that by, you can see that square brackets on the end of the co-array, and the processor, it's the K argument there in square brackets is which processor it gets it from. So everybody has a co-array, a co-bucket array, and it just grabs from whichever one. It does this in a random order on each, a different random order on each task so that it avoids hotspots on the network. If you do this in a patterned way, with everybody doing it the same way, you get a lot of kind of many-to-one or one-to-many patterns, and that's a bad thing. You have to have some synchronization in this to be sure the results are correct. You have to complete the copies before you start doing the communication. So there's some synchronization built in there. In order to overlap communication with the copies, to try to hide the cost of these copies, I kind of split it into even and odd chunks. So if you're doing two chunks, there's one even and one odd chunk. And so it can be copying, it can be communicating one chunk in the top line there, if it's odd, say, and then copying the next chunk at the same time. I just have to have a barrier going from one chunk to the next to ensure correctness. So Co-Array Fortran has an ability to keep going until you tell it to synchronize. See, I left a synchronization directive off there, but basically this is the gist of it. All right, so there are new non-blocking MPI collectives in the latest MPI 3.something standard, and they've been added, but they have a name. So it's the analogous thing to an MPI I-SEN. Instead, it's MPI I all to all, but there's still an X, an MPI X in the name because it's not quite a ratified part of the standard. I think that's the reason. So it just adds this little request handle argument on there, and then you have to call wait to tell it, okay, we can do overlap work up to that weight. So in the test harness, I do this two ways. One way, I just call the weight immediately and then do the computational work, and it gives me a baseline timing, so I know how long the computation took and how long the communication was. And then in the second test, I put the weight after the work so that I can see how much of that gets overlapped. So we'll run a bunch of experiments like that. There's a lot of flexibility in Coleridge Fortran here. So this is if someone were willing to bite the bullet and integrate the Coleridge Fortran into their code, and it's not too bad. There is just to do the all-in, there's a subscript computation here, which isn't that, it's difficult to do, but not critical to understand what's going on. What's going on is it's just getting a piece of this message from each of the other processors. So in the square brackets, that my row, comma J1, is telling it which process to grab that piece of the message from. So it grabs the appropriate piece. I just put that directive there, this pgraph, the per synchronization before the Coleridge Fortran statement. Then compiler knows to let things go on until their synchronization later. And so it can finish up that do loop and then get out and call do work while that communication is going on that's underlying this Coleridge Fortran communication. So I test both a version that has the synchronization before and after that chunk of work there, so I can see how much of that work was overlapped. Now the most extreme version of this is if the work happened to be the same outer loop index like this, and I can put this work in there, I can inline this work. And that's extremely efficient. It just may not be applicable to everybody's application, where if you have a call FFTW or something like that, there was no way for me to shoehorn this in like that. But this is fake work, and so I could manipulate it to be like that. So it's just some busy work. Put it in the same loop. We'll see how that compares to having it jump out of the loop and so forth. So it's going to turn out that this one's quite good, but kind of a special case thing where you can't use it that often. Okay, so hopefully I can go on to some sample results here. So the science team is interested in running a problem that has an 8K cubed grid on 8,000 nodes. So they can put one XY plane for each node, right? So they want to use 16 processes per node. So it uses a lot of memory, so we use huge pages. Coleridge Fortran needs to put all its data in the symmetric heap, and so you make the size of that larger than the default here. The eager limit is something that, since I'm interested in messages that are smaller, I calculated what the message size should be, and it's 4K, so that's smaller than the default eager message size. So that means it's not going to use the protocol that the RDMA thing that has the block transfer engine. That's the one you want. Starts at 8K and up, so I want to lower the eager limit so it uses that block transfer engine protocol for messages larger than 2K. At the smaller messages, you get a little more overhead. There's more latency in that message, but once it gets going, it's able to overlap things more efficiently than the eager protocols for small messages. There's an equivalent environment variable for the Coleridge Fortran. It took some digging. It's not documented very well anywhere, but pgraph to offload threshold is the one that will have Coleridge Fortran offload from the CPU. That means the network card starts taking care of the communication and the CPU can go on and do other work. So I made those equal footing there. There's a couple of other environment variables there to turn on the asynchronous progress engine and allow it to have multiple threads going the same. So there's a communication thread. And so when the job is launched, you see toward the end of that statement there, there's this minus R1. That is the core specialization. So there's one core devoted to operating system calls, et cetera, and one of those tasks that it gets is the communication thread. So it just checks the progress of the communication while the network card takes care of it. So the CPU is free to devote all its time to doing computational work. Okay, so we see the results. The various algorithms are listed there, and then the times are displayed. The the rogue communicators are the ones that are on node. That happens very quickly, so it's not very interesting. There's very small numbers. We don't care. The two columns on the right are the ones of interest. That's the column communicators. They go off node. The t-total is the total time, so that includes any computational work. For the non-blocking methods, it's the non-blocking call plus the computational work, and for the overlap ones, that's some of the work is overlapped, so it can be a little bit faster. And on the far right column, I'm timing the computational work as best I can. It's slightly different for certain calls there, and you can imagine why that is. If there's overlap going on, it might take the CPU a little longer to do that work because it is getting interrupted a little bit to put more data on the network, and you can see that pretty well. So I don't quite trust my standard MPI timings there. I think I messed up something in this loop that gives it some overhead. There is an all-reduce that I just caught today in there that's helping for the other iterations. But anyway, so that's a little kind of an outlier. I don't trust that. But the others are very reproducible. So there is a non-blocking call. MPI does the MIB. That's the one that has the work after the wait. And that's about 15 seconds. And then MIN is the one that tries to overlap the work. And that's only 8.3 seconds. So you can see it's overlapped nearly all of that 7 point something seconds worth of work. So this works very well, even at 8K nodes and 16 processes per node. We were told during the training that it didn't work quite as well for 16 senders, but in fact, the proof here in the experiment shows it really does work well as advertised. On the downside for the CoRAID Fortran, I'm not getting any overlap. The CRB, one that has this whole loop of stuff, and then it has a call for this do work subroutine. I didn't get much overlap there. Those 14.6 and 13.8, I'm not really getting much overlap. But I called up the developers and found out why this was. If you have more than 4K streams of communication going, DMAP has a limitation right there. So they would have to recompile DMAP for me, just for me, with a larger limit so that I could get overlap. And so I'm stuck there. I'll show you some results for 4K nodes that show good overlap. So it's just machines of this scale aren't very common, let's say. And so that's where they set their limit. That last one has the inline work, CSB and CSN. And you can see there I get excellent overlap. That's because I don't have as many streams because I just have the work is inlined in there, and CoRAID Fortran is able to automatically overlap that without involving the block transfer engine very much. So that worked great, and it was even faster than the non-blocking MPI. But those two, the overlap was very successful, and they're of comparable speed. So either choice, you might say, why don't I just use MPI non-blocking then? I say, go ahead. Okay, so for results in 4K nodes, in this case, you can see for the last two that are the CoRAID Fortran cases, there's substantial overlap there. The bottom one that does non-blocking is almost 2 seconds. Almost all of the computational work faster. So the overlap was successful, and it is faster than the MPI version by quite a lot. So in some cases, the CoRAID Fortran can outperform the MPI considerably. Depends on a lot of different things. Different aspects of this are tuned. And, of course, you'd like both of them to be pretty much the same, but that really takes a great deal of effort. So if you find you're seeing a performance anomaly like this, it could be something to bring to the attention of me, and I will relate that to the developers so they can maybe tune something. We expect a better-tuned version of MPI to be coming in July. This is the July release of the their message passing toolkit with version 6.0 point something. So that should make it on par with CoRAID Fortran 2. You wouldn't see these longer times here like this. Okay. Finally, kind of the line in red there, that's the version of I have very little computational work because I wanted to see if my overlapping the copy of the next block with the communication to the current block thing in the CoRAID Fortran library, that's COM, was effective. I haven't actually compared them head-to-head, but in this set of results you can see that version of CoRay, or that implementation with CoRay, is faster than any of the other implementations. One reason for that is that I've used the default values for the environment variables above for the symmetric heap size, and I don't have much to overlap, so they don't gain anything. And in fact, you see this is the fastest one because it's breaking up the messages into the small pieces. And that's working very well, and the overlap hides the cost of that extra copy. So that's actually apparently successful. I have to verify this. But what's nice about that is that no change will be needed to the PSDNS surveillance code in order to use that because it's internal to the library. So, okay, conclusions. You saw that the non-blocking MPI all call is effective and allows you to overlap considerable computational work. So that was good news. For the turbulence code, the bad news was that they don't really have that much computational work that can be overlapped because the only thing they have is copy data into the communication buffer and 1D FFTs, and that's only about a third of their total computational work. So we're hoping that the unblocking in our library there with the overlap will help there. We also noticed that unblocking CoRay Fortran implementations are effective also, at least they can be as good as the MPI all-to-all non-blocking. So that's good news. It gives you more options to try to overlap things depending on your situation. The best of all is to inline the work with the CoRay Fortran. That's not practical for that many applications, but that is one of the most effective things you can do. That has been used at Cray to do some of the benchmarks like HPCC. So if you have kernels like that, it might be something worth exploring to go faster than you can with MPI. Okay, so the next step is to just integrate the best of these methods into the turbulence code and see if we get a reasonable overall speed up. Okay, that's all I have for the presentation. I'll be glad to take any questions you may have.
All right, thanks, Bob. Very interesting presentation on large-scale communication issues on our system. So let me see if anyone has a question they want to raise. Go ahead and raise it on the phone or raise your hand if you're online. And this is a good opportunity to interact with your with our Cray application engineer. Like Bob said, there are some changes coming down the line to some of the performance of the regular MPI all-to-all as well, so some of his runs will need to be redone to compare performance. We've seen some preliminary data, which is quite promising, especially for smaller message sizes. It substantially improves performance, but we're eager to get that pushed out after the XK upgrade. Bob's presentation is available on the portal under the webinar area of the portal. And so if you have any questions, feel free to contact us and we can relay that information off to Bob if we're not able to answer it ourselves. I don't really have any other information to discuss with the audience today. So we appreciate you joining our call, and I'll send out an email announcement in the coming weeks about whether we'll have the July Blue Waters users webinar call because of the XK outage, or the full system outage because of the XK upgrade. And if you have any questions or comments, please send me an email, and I'll make sure we'll implement those and discuss those with you and whatever changes are recommended. So. We appreciate Bob again for coming and giving a nice presentation during the middle of summer, or I guess early summer, and we hope the rest of you have a productive summer despite the upcoming outage. Note that it's going to start July 15th and run for approximately 4 weeks. If we can get the system back earlier, we will certainly try to do so. And that's about it. If you have any questions or comments, please send them my way, and I'll be sure and reply back to you. Thank you very much.